From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty, bringing you the news on this day in Maine, Wednesday, January 17th, 2018. And on this day, a bill that would help homeless people find housing and treatment for opioid addiction draws support and some questions. And how one Portland construction company is dealing with the state's labor shortage. That's ahead in just a moment.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners like you and by New England Rehabilitation Hospital of Portland, helping patients and their families after illness or injury. Learn more at nerhp.org.
An 18-year-old New Hampshire man died and a 17-year-old boy was seriously injured in a sledding accident at Sunday River Ski Resort early this morning. Fred Bever has that story.
Three visitors are believed to have made an after-hours trek up a steep Sunday River ski trail, and two of them tried to slide down on a snow tube-style sled, according to police and resort officials. But the sled crashed into a tree, killing one male and seriously injuring another. Portsmouth High School principal Mary Lyons told the Associated Press that a senior, David Kolhase, died in the crash and that another student was hospitalized. Police say the third person called for help. Oxford County Sheriff's Office and other emergency responders were on the scene around 2 a.m. following the 911 call. A Sunday River spokeswoman says the Tempest Trail, where the accident occurred, includes both expert and intermediate skiing terrain. But Darcy Lambert says sledding is not allowed outside Sunday River's tubing park, which is located in a different part of the resort.
Our thoughts and deepest sympathies are with the family and loved ones. The ski community is a small community, and today's tragedy affects us all.
Lambert says the family of one of the teens involved owns a condo near the mountain. Portsmouth High is planning to provide counseling for students, and the investigation is continuing. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Fred Bever.
A bipartisan group of lawmakers is backing a proposal that would help 50 of Maine's homeless residents get treatment for opioid addiction and stable housing. The pilot project was before the Health and Human Services Committee today and drew dozens of supporters, but at least one lawmaker questioned whether it would be the best use of resources to tackle the problem. Patty White reports.
For more than two decades, Portland social service agency Preble Street didn't have a single overdose at any of its programs or buildings, says Executive Director Mark Swan. That changed 4 years ago.
A young man was discovered on the floor of our soup kitchen bathroom with a needle in his arm, not breathing, his lips blue.
That marked the beginning of a trend, says Swan. The next year, Preble Street saw one overdose every 3 months. In 2016, it was once every 2 weeks. Last year, it was one every 8 days.
And as tragic as it is to think about somebody alone and desperate dying in a soup kitchen bathroom, what's even more horrific is that every person who had overdosed, every single one, at some point had asked us for help before that overdose.
But too often, Swan says, treatment is not available. There aren't enough programs, and those that exist typically require insurance, which most of Preble Street's clients don't have.
This battle is being lost with respect to some of Maine's poorest and most at-risk people.
Democratic Representative Drew Gattine says lawmakers need to do more to tackle the opioid problem. And a bill he's sponsoring, he says, targets those who are most at risk. It would establish a pilot program to provide treatment to 50 of Maine's homeless.
The nuts and bolts of this bill direct DHHS to create programs in both rural and populated parts of the state.
Those in the program would receive medication-assisted treatment, case management, and peer support. They'd also be placed in stable housing. That's a key element, says Dr. Renee Faye LeBlanc, Chief Medical Officer of Greater Portland Health.
This bill will allow patients to get to a place where they can be successful in traditional substance use programs, and it will save lives.
Getting into my own apartment was so important for my recovery.
Brianna Nielsen of Portland was among dozens of people who testified in support of the bill, many of whom are in recovery from substance use. Nielsen says she was also homeless for several months, but has now been sober for nearly 2 years. She attributes her success to a treatment program and stable housing.
When people are sleeping on mats crowded in an emergency shelter surrounded by drug use, it's so hard to find stability and peace.
The pilot program would also target people who are well known to the criminal justice system. Cumberland County Sheriff Kevin Joyce says inmates tell him that they feel safer in jail than when they're free.
Because they know the first stop is probably going to be to a friend, and that friend is going to want to sell them drugs, and before you know it, they're back at it.
The bill didn't draw any opposing testimony, but Republican State Senator Eric Brakey, who serves as the committee's co-chair, questioned Portland Police Chief Mike Soschuk about whether the pilot program would be the best way to get at the problem.
Especially when we don't have enough resources to cover everyone who is ready to make that decision for themselves.
Chief Soschuk, who supports the pilot program, says something has to be done to get people the help they need.
What we have now is we have thousands and thousands and thousands of Mainers that are coming forward and saying, I need treatment. And then we say, that's great. Come back in 6 weeks and I might get you a bed.
The bill does not include an estimate of the cost of the program. Sponsor Drew Gattin says whatever the cost, it will be a more effective use of resources to get people treatment than for them to cycle through hospital emergency departments and jails. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Patty White.
Immigrants make up only a little bit over 3% of Maine's population. That's much less than the national figure of more than 13%. But in spite of barriers to entering the workforce, immigrants are filling critical jobs in Maine as more and more industry veterans retire. As Caroline Losneck reports, one small Portland company is finding ways around the state's labor shortage while also aiming to change the face of construction in Maine.
Then I put 2 coats of paint on these metal stuff.
55-year-old Albin Brother Boynes is up on a ladder talking to the three other men on this crew. They're building out a new storefront on Forest Avenue in Portland.
So now it's dry, I'm putting these back in, and then I'm going to keep doing the same thing all the way down to the end.
The crew works for the construction and renovation company, Bondeco.
And it's a word that means the feeling of being family with people who are not necessarily your family. And a feeling of equal.
Orson Horkler, who started Bondeco 2 years ago, says the word is from Lingala, a language spoken by many Congolese and Angolan residents of Portland. Bondeco actively trains and hires immigrants, refugees, and asylum seekers, who sometimes get a work permit before becoming fluent in English. Horkler says the name Bondeco
kind of exemplifies who we are as a business.
Pay starts at $15 to $25 an hour. There are 4 full-time and 2 part-time workers, including a woman on the crew. Horkler says his phone rings off the hook with people looking for work, while his competitors are having a very different experience.
All over the U.S. and in Maine, there's a real crisis in construction. And contractors I know, great contractors, they just cannot find help.
Horkler says both of his parents were immigrants. He lived in Maine as a child, then moved to France until he was 18, returning to the U.S. 21 years ago. Today, 3 languages are spoken on the job site, French, English, and Albanian.
We'll get started on the door.
And the crew often turns to Google Translate and even hand signals to communicate. Horkler and Sam, a 67-year-old experienced carpenter from Albania, use drawings and diagrams.
What's called shaker style.
Horkler communicates more easily with French-speaking workers, like 20-year-old Christopher, who moved from Congo 8 months ago. When Christopher isn't at adult ed, he's working.
And money will come. The more important, if I'm here, is first of all to learn this job. And it's helped me about with my English. I really like this job because here I found, in general, all the words in English here. Sometimes at the school, they don't teach me things that they teach me here.
Making sure there are opportunities to learn English, to learn the English specific to that industry.
That's John Scribner, director of Start Smart, a program at Coastal Enterprises that helps new Americans start and grow small businesses.
Being a little more flexible or a little more patient initially, I think, can really lead to a loyal, hardworking employee.
Horkler agrees.
It's actually, I think, is the best place to learn a language is at work.
Beyond language, Scribner says Maine's construction industry as a whole is starting to offer what he calls on-ramps into the trade, like the construction training program offered last year by Lewiston Adult Ed and other agencies. The program included classwork, technical skills training, and job-specific language. 8 graduates completed the curriculum and were offered on-the-job training with local contractors.
This is one solution to that demographic cliff that we're all hearing about and talking about. One of the solutions is the immigrant workforce.
But part of that solution, says Horkler, also requires that the culture redefine who a construction worker in Maine is.
And it's a very strict definition. And it's a definition that at times I've fit really well because I'm white, straight, male.
Horkler says the diversity of his crew often surprises people.
And to me, it's like changing that. When I show up on a job site and people see that and hear that we're from all different countries, they see people of different racial background and cultural background. I want it to be something that people not only expect but even desire.
Workplace camaraderie extends into the off hours. On a recent cold day, the crew helped Horkler move, and Horkler says he helps them in their personal lives as well.
Often after work, I'm helping somebody find housing, calling the hospital to understand a bill, even responding to questions about the most basic knowledge of dating in America, let's say.
Horkler says his company's commitment to working directly with immigrant workers isn't just about helping them become financially secure.
I myself still have sometimes negative experiences of being plunged in this different culture every day. I've created what people might call a safe space on my job site. We all share the joy and the pain of migration, of immigration, of being in the U.S., of not understanding culture.
When the Bondeco crew wraps up this job, they'll start a custom bathroom renovation, building upon work they have already done for restaurants in Maine's red-hot culinary scene and in homes. So far, their hard work is paying off. Albin, Brother Boynes.
Oh, well, every time we do something and it's pretty cool, we post it on Facebook. So we get a lot of response from that and people love what we do.
For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Caroline Losnick.
For more of today's Maine news, visit our website, mainepublic.org. And from Maine Public, that's This Day in Maine for Wednesday, January 17th, 2018. Thanks to Ed Morin and our digital team, I'm Nora Flaherty.